drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of two. I would love to devote more time to creative writing, journaling, and blogging.
And I'm Abigail Creeves, a writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom who is just beginning to learn the ropes of balancing a baby and everything else.
And you are listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast. This week on Chasing Creative, we're talking about something that both Abby and I, and I think all of our listeners, are very passionate about, which is books. It's a whole episode dedicated to creativity and reading, which we figured was something that we would have no trouble talking about. So basically, any way that reading and creativity intersect, it's like one giant mini book club.
It is. And I think it's a great episode to end the year on. Something fun to move everyone kind of into the holidays. And I don't know, no pressure. Reading is no pressure, right?
Hopefully. If you're an English major coming up on finals week, that might not be the case. But for most of us, hopefully reading is a little bit of an escape and a way to relax in the holiday season. So how do you use reading to encourage your creativity?
Ooh, I find that reading can either help my creativity or distract me from doing anything creative at all, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit later in this episode. But I think for the most part, reading has always kind of confirmed for me that I am not alone in different areas of life, whether it's not alone in the fact that I like to read and write, or reading made me not feel so alone when, like, I was just different from everybody that was kind of around me. I'm kind of the black sheep in my family, that I liked school and I liked books and things like that. So finding a community of readers that also felt the same way was really, really helpful for me to feel a little less isolated, I guess, if that makes any sense.
It does. Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. And I think that reading brings, not only does it have such a community with it, but it also exposes you to so many different points of view and perspectives, even if you're reading, you know, fiction or nonfiction. I think it can really, maybe you connect with a character or the author of a memoir or something like that, where you just sort of are like, oh, there are other people in the world who think the way I do. Or, you know, sometimes it can expose you to a new point of view, which can be a good thing if it's something that you've never thought about before. So reading can definitely stretch your boundaries that way and also at the same time make you feel more at home.
Absolutely. So what do you think encourages your creativity about reading?
So for me, I read a lot of memoir and a lot of memoirs by people who are, like, they've written their memoirs and then they go back and they write a book about writing. So seeing what they've accomplished in their own creative lives is always really inspiring to me, because their lives were typically never perfect, never ideal, but they managed to make writing happen anyway. Or even in a memoir, you can see somebody like, oh, you did not have the life of someone that you would imagine would turn out to be a best-selling author, but here you are. So it sort of just gives hope for the rest of us, I suppose. And in that way, it's inspiring that you should just keep working at it and not put it off until someday.
Yeah. No, that is a really good point. And I find too that a lot of times when I read memoir, I always think, like, I have such an unremarkable life. Like, why on earth would anyone ever want to listen to, you know, the woes of Abby? But I find when I read other people's memoir, it's less about what has happened to them and more about how they write about it. And I think that is equally inspiring, that even your story, no matter how boring you think it can be, could be something really special that someone else needs to hear.
That's true. And I think along with that, how you write something, by being a big reader, a lot of what you absorb through osmosis through those books comes out into your own writing. So you're growing your vocabulary. You're maybe subconsciously learning lessons about pacing and plot and characterization and all those things that it's like you need to study great art before you can produce great art, I think, in probably any medium or any genre. So reading can definitely help with that if your creativity is of the writing nature.
Yes, I agree. So what books on creativity have you found extremely helpful in your own life? I have a feeling we have some overlaps here.
I know. I think we do have some overlaps, and I think these are probably all books that we have mentioned on the podcast before. I'll start with one that I know I have not talked about before because I just finished it. So I possibly have more to say about it than the others, but that's called Deep Work by Cal Newport. And it's not specifically written for creatives. It's about how our culture and our society has, through the use of the internet and social media and all of that, sort of lost the ability to focus and concentrate on what the author calls deep work. So work that is not instant gratification. It's going to take a long time and a lot of hours and a lot of hard work and revision and going back to this project again and again and possibly collaborating with other people, but it'll have a bigger payoff. So, you know, something like the thing that comes to mind obviously for a writer is writing an entire book compared to writing a tweet. You know, he's making the argument that you write so many tweets, but what if that time was going towards this deeper work and that more focused, concentrated work? And I think there's a lot of lessons there that are applicable. He kind of spins it towards the business world or the academic world a little bit, but I think there's a lot there that could be applicable for creatives who are trying to block off that time and make it kind of sacred time for their creative work.
Yeah. I have had that book on my radar for a while, so I'm glad to say to hear that you enjoyed it and learned a lot from it. I will keep it on the list then. I've heard it talked about a lot in that kind of same frame, being able to really dive deep into something as opposed to just kind of like the surface of things like Twitter or Facebook posts or whatever. How do you feel? I struggle with this only because of probably like where I'm at in my season of life is like, I never get time for deep work. Like I never have more than an hour at a time to do anything of, you know, meaningful substance. So it is so much easier to just, you know, schedule some social media stuff or write a blog post or finish an essay or maybe even just proofread an essay and that's all I have time for, as opposed to actually like creating something big and meaningful. Do you kind of find the same to be true at the moment?
You know, I was skeptical of this book for that same reason, but what I was so blown away by was that the author took the time to spend like 2/3 of the book on to how you actually go deep, not just why you should, but how to avoid distractions. And he outlines 4 different types of schedules, and the first 2 would absolutely not work for most people. Even if you don't have kids, it's just not possible because it involves like going away to a remote location and like not having a job. So like, even if you don't have kids, that's not something most people can do. But the other 2 schedules are things that are very doable. One of them, I can't remember the exact names he used for them, but one of them was what we hear from a lot of people, that they just block off that same chunk of time every single day and they make like a chain of like every day I X off that I wrote or that I painted or that I did whatever creative project, you know, practice piano, whatever. And they use that same chunk of time every day. So it becomes a habit. That's one of the schedules. And then another one was what he calls, I think it was the journalistic type of deep work, where journalists get really used to being on a deadline. And so they become good at diving in and out of deep work quickly. They don't need a long runway to ramp up to focusing. And the better you get at that, the more often you can be like, oh, I have a random hour here because somebody just offered to babysit my kid. Or, oh, I have a random extra chunk of time because I finished this and the baby's still napping. And you can dive into deep work and actually, even though it's only 30 minutes, still make pretty good use of that time. rather than squandering it once you get into that mindset. So it was very interesting, and I appreciated that not all hope was lost for those of us who are parents.
Yes, because I know so often the advice is, well, just set aside a large chunk of time to work on this big project. And you're like, just, it's not possible. It's not going to happen this year or this decade even, sometimes you think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found the journalistic approach to be actually pretty similar to what I do in my life with my work anyway. I'm not a journalist, but as a freelance writer, I do have to take like, okay, the kids are napping. Like, it doesn't matter if I feel inspired, I have to write now. So I can take that same kind of mindset and apply it to the creative work as well. I just need to be disciplined about doing it, but those results can still add up. So yeah. What are some of the books on your list?
So I feel like you said, we've talked about a lot of these throughout the years we've been doing the podcast here. It's weird to say years that we've been doing the podcast.
I know.
One we've talked about a little less is probably The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. Mm-hmm. And for me, this was really fundamental. I read it probably 2 years ago now when I was really kind of digging into blogging and trying to write a novel and all of that. And it really helped me realize that creativity is work and not just the whim of a muse. And he really hammers that home, that you have to like sit down and show up every day and be willing to do actual real work, even when you don't feel inspired. So like you said, having to sit down and write when you don't feel like sitting down and writing, because that's the only time you have to do it. That is exactly what kind of The War of Art is talking about, and encouraging creative people to not look at their creativity as something that's like a gifted to them when the timing is right, because that is rare and probably not going to happen for you.
Yeah. It's easy for the culture or society to sort of portray that image of like the genius artist who's just struck by the muse. But I enjoyed that book also. And I remember, it's been a few years since I've read it too, but I remember just like having all these takeaways from it where I was like underlining all these like passages and being
entire
like,
paragraphs.
Yeah. And I was like, I'll need to go back and look at these. And obviously I haven't, and I should again, but I agree, being left with an impression of like, this is doable, but it's going to take effort. And if you think it's not, or if you're not willing to put the effort in, then I should just be honest with myself about that right now and quit wasting my time.
Yes, that is accurate. A little bit of a, you know, gut punch for those of us who keep saying we just don't have time, but true nonetheless. Otherwise, some books that we've talked about before, I will always recommend A Million Little Ways by Emily P. Freeman, kind of encouraging creative people, or even people who don't think they're creative, kind of encourages them to take a look at their life and see if their life isn't art itself, is kind of the takeaway that I'm remembering from that book. It's been probably about a year and a half since I've read it. Would you have anything else to add to that description?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've read that one too, which reminds me that I need to go back to it because I usually reread it in the fall and I didn't this year. So I'll probably need to revisit it this winter. But it's just for anybody who is feeling like they're too ordinary to do big things, or like whatever little chunks of creative work they are able to produce, like they don't matter. Emily Freeman's writing is just so amazing for reminding you that your work does matter and those ordinary things that you do matter. And even, you know, small things that you might not view as creativity, it all counts. Mm-hmm. So it's a really encouraging read, especially for those of us who are kind of in the trenches with, you know, juggling work and small kids and everything else.
Yes. And where I would say The War of Art by Pressfield is kind of a, you know, sledgehammer. Anything that Emily Freeman writes is like the most gentle and soft kind of encouragement that a creative person needs. So kind of depending on what kick in the pants you need, you could either go hard with Stephen Pressfield or like gentle with Emily Freeman.
Yes, definitely a time and a place for both.
And then another book we always talk about, Essentialism by Greg McKeown. It's not specifically about creativity, like deep work, but I think there's so many applicable applicable? How do you say that word?
I say applicable, but okay. I was corrected about the way I say a word at Thanksgiving by a relative. So who knows? I could be totally wrong.
It's okay. I made it to my mid-20s and still pronounced superfluous as superfluous and was corrected by Scott, who is not the world's grammar expert by any long shot.
Yeah, well, at least it was someone close to you who could be like, hey, Abby, maybe don't say that in public.
Right. So anyway, I'm sitting on the podcast here. Anyway, essentialism, it's applicable to kind of all of life. And we've talked about that before, whether it's, you know, getting organized or trying to manage your household or working on a creative project, kind of helping you strip things down to the bare essentials and only focus on what really and truly matters is often the issue for any creative person who's trying to go in a million different directions and just cannot find that one thing they need to be focusing on right now.
Yes, and that is how I've been feeling lately, especially as we start thinking about the new year ahead and setting goals. And I just find myself torn in so many different directions that I know returning to essentialism is something that I need to do for my own sanity.
Yes, I thought the exact same thing earlier today, or maybe it was yesterday. Someone was like, hey, let's, you know, start a group about goals for 2018. I was like, that's great. Can you help me figure out mine? Because I don't know what they are.
Yes. Yeah, so another book that I know we have talked about, I'm not sure if you finished it or not, but it's Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. Have you read that one, or did you start it, or did you finish it?
I started it, and I think I got about two chapters in, and this was last summer while we were trying to build a house and found out we were expecting, and I just kind of never, ever picked it up again. So I'm pretty sure like Goodreads has marked it being read for me for at least 18 months at this point.
I know. I always feel such shame. I'm like, Goodreads, stop showing me the picture of that book that I've clearly abandoned.
Yes. And I don't actually even know where it is. Oh, it is. It is on my shelf. It's on my shelf of to be read books. Like, it's an entire shelf of books I need to read.
Well, good.
It's there.
I'm glad your shelves are more organized than mine.
Eh, somewhat.
Yeah. So Big Magic is, it's not for everybody. It's a little bit woo-woo. Liz Gilbert wrote Eat, Pray, Love, I think. That's what she wrote, right? I haven't read that book.
Me neither.
Big Magic because I heard it was about creativity, but I get the sense that she's like not totally my kind of person. Like, she's a little bit out there, but then a lot of the stuff that she says about creativity and about going after it and being bold and just... Mm-hmm. You know, seeing what happens, just showing up and giving your creativity a chance to get out there, I think is really encouraging for people who might be kind of an in-between of Stephen Pressfield and Emily Freeman. You need a kick in the pants, but it's going to be more of a cheerleader who is reminding you that you do have something to offer rather than that sledgehammer that comes in and, you know, bulldozes all your dreams.
Yes, that's, I would say that's accurate. I've not finished Big Magic, obviously, but I loved Liz Gilbert's podcast kind of along the same topic. Was it called Big Magic? Magic Lessons.
You know, it was called Magic Lessons, but I'm pretty sure that if you go to look up that podcast now, you will have to search for Riverhead Books, I think, because that's what, like, that's what the podcast title comes up as in my iTunes list right now. But the little thumbnail picture still says Magic Lessons with Elizabeth Gilbert. So you will link to it if we can find it in the show notes. But if you're just trying to search for it, you might have to try a couple different keywords, Magic Lessons or Riverhead Books.
That is good to know. I have not listened to it in probably a year. So
yeah, well, I don't know if they're coming out with new episodes anymore. I think I have it updating. So unless they like moved it to somewhere else, I have not gotten a new episode since 2015.
Oh goodness. Well then.
So, you know, what's there is good.
It is.
If you want to listen to it.
It's absolutely worth going back and listening to.
Yeah.
And I think that's incredibly accurate. Elizabeth Gilbert is your creativity cheerleader. I think that's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then another book that I think we have both read is The Crossroads of Should and Must by Elle Luna. Have you read that one?
I have not.
Oh, okay. I thought you told me about it, but you must not have been. Maybe it was another guest on the podcast.
It was. It was Kayla Hollitz, I think, who introduced us to her first.
Okay. Yes. So Elle Luna, the author of this book, is the one who originally started the 100 Days Project that we've talked about on the podcast a couple times. And I don't know that she's part of that project anymore, but she sort of spearheaded getting it started. And this book is, it's really difficult to describe. It's like part comic book almost, but comic book is not right because it's not like a graphic novel. It's just sort of like a, I can't even describe it. It's just like very heavily illustrated. Like she, it's almost like a children's book for adults about, like the title implies, it's about all of those of us who are in the adult world, and we go, well, we should do this because this is the responsible adult thing to do. And she's saying, but there's another path, the path that you must do because you're the only person with this particular book idea, and you're the only person with this painting style and or this music style or, you know, all these creative things that you could be doing. And she sort of leads you through this, I'll call it an adult children's book, this glorious little well-designed, beautiful book of encouraging you to go after your dreams if that's something that you're maybe still struggling with. So again, another encouraging voice for people.
Is that one fairly easy to dive into and dive out of, or is it pretty like linear story?
I would say it's almost a one sitting read. Like I feel like because there is so much, she says a lot in not very many words. Let's put it that way. So I feel like if you had an hour or two, you could probably get through the whole thing. I'm trying to remember because it's been a little while since I've read it, but it's not very difficult or very long. It could be like a, I'm just going to sit here. You could even sit there at the bookstore, probably, if your bookstore has a cafe. Grab this book and flip through it and be encouraged.
There you go. So if anyone is maybe struggling to find time to pour into their own creative life and find encouragement and is a little bit daunted by reading one or two or four 200, 300 page books, maybe start with Crossroads of Should and Must and get kind of a little bite-sized pep talk and then see where that takes you.
Yes. And even just the illustrations in this book are inspiring. They just make you want to go create something. And that's coming from somebody who cannot draw a picture to save her life. So they make you wish you could draw if you can't.
So how do you choose what you read, Ashley?
So I have a giant list, as I'm sure many of our listeners do, on Goodreads, the holder of all of my literary life, for better or worse. And I just sort of add to my Goodreads list every time I hear, you know, from a blogger or see from a friend on Instagram or hear from a friend in real life. Every time I get a book recommendation, I just pop open Goodreads and add it to my to-be-read list. And then the next time I'm looking for something to read or I'm, you know, seeing what's available at the library or what's on Kindle deals, I'll see if there's any overlap with my Goodreads list. And there's not really like, I don't go down the list like this is next on the list. This is what's next up. It's more of a combination of what's on sale and what's readily available and what I feel like reading at the moment. So it's still a little bit coincidental because there's like 150 things on my to be read list. But I don't really just browse the aisles of the bookstore or the library like I used to when I was younger.
Yeah. That's probably in part because browsing is not relaxing when you have children in tow.
This is true.
I can't actually remember the last time I've browsed the aisles of a bookstore. It's been a while.
It's kind of sad almost. I feel like it's a byproduct of blogging and social media that we just know what we want to read next rather than waiting for the next book to jump out at us from the shelves. But yeah, maybe that's something we should try to do more of in 2018. There's a goal.
I like that goal.
Yes.
Excellent. I would say that I am fairly similar in how I decide what to read next. Mostly comes from recommendations from people, whether they're people I actually know in real life or people I quote unquote know on the internet. I mean, I don't know, yeah, I get recommendations from everywhere and then try to, like you said, add them to the Goodreads list and just kind of pick and choose from what's available or what sounds good or the kind of book that I need to read at the moment, whether it's something fluffy and I don't have to think too hard or whether it's something that I need to encourage me in some way, shape, or form.
Yes. Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. Like, you have to just know what you need next. Like, you just sort of instinctively know what kind of book should be next up on your radar. So do you read more like I know there are some people who read only classics and some people who read only what's brand new out and on the bestseller list or only what's up for various literary prizes, or are you kind of all over the map with where you get your recommendations and all that?
Yeah, I'm pretty all over the map. This year I was pretty heavily stacked towards the fiction of any and all kinds, just because, I don't know, having a baby means you don't have a brain anymore, at least for those first few months. And I've kind of fallen into that pattern of just reading fiction for the time being. But also because I feel like if I were to have read any book that was talking to me about things that I should do to improve my life, I would not have had any time or attention span to do it.
Yeah.
So it would have been kind of a waste. The same with like any articles online about like how to improve your business or whatever. I've just completely avoided all of them because I wasn't going to do any of it anyway. So why not rack up the guilt?
Fair enough.
Yeah. But it's time, I think, now that Arthur is, 7 going on 8 months old, to dive back into like some actual good for me books, whether it is more classic literature or even some nonfiction that would maybe help me figure out my goals for 2018.
Yeah. So speaking of goals, when it comes to reading, some people might think we're totally crazy, but I think we both set reading goals for the year, don't we?
Usually, yeah. And normally it's when Goodreads reminds me to set a reading goal. I don't normally have like, ooh, I want to read X amount of books next year, kind of constantly in the back of my mind. Do you?
When I was like 12, I decided that I wanted to read 1,000 books before I died, which like, can I just say that I'm really like, even as a 12-year-old, like I was not great at math, and I should have realized that although 1,000 books sounds like this super big number, the rate at which I read and the average lifespan of a female in the United States means that 1,000 books before I die was not that great of a goal. Yes.
This is why you were an English major and not a math major.
I like never sat down and did that math. So what I used to do in my childhood, like infinite wisdom, I kept literally a piece of notebook paper with like tally marks every time I finished a book. Like, I didn't write down the name of the book I read, which I apparently just thought I was going to have a great memory because I was not accepting repeats. So, but I just kept tally marks and didn't arrange them by year or anything. And I did that probably up through high school, like a weirdo. And now, like I said, Goodreads is pretty much my literary brain, which is not great because if Goodreads ever goes away, I'm going to be sad.
Yes, I'm a little worried about that myself, which I think is specifically a book nerd problem. So when I was in junior high and high school, I did keep lists of things that I read, but I kept them like on printed lined paper and just would write the author and title. And I think I might have even given them like a star rating or something, whether or not I thought they were like a 1-star book or a 4-star book. I am terrified that Goodreads is someday going to disappear like Google Reader once did once upon a time, and everything that I'd ever saved in it just like poof, gone. So I have an if this then that formula that automatically backs up anything that I log on Goodreads into my Evernote diary. So that is handy.
Oh, that's smart. Once again, you are better at technology than I am because we talk about this all the time. Evernote is like not my friend. It's somehow my enemy. I don't understand. Yeah. It's like a junk drawer full of things I don't want to look at.
Yeah, but once you know how you've organized the junk drawer, it works out really well. So I can send you some links, or maybe I'll share them in the show notes about how to do that, to use if this, then that. If you're not familiar with it, it's just like a online formula creator to help you do things without thinking about them.
Yeah, it's like an automation kind of yeah, an yes, automation formula. Yeah, it's great. I use If This Then That for other things, and it's fantastic. But I would really like, I see all these people with their bullet journals, and I am not a bullet mm-hmm. journaler. Like, I've tried, and it wasn't great. And then I read, or I think Kendra Adachi did a podcast about it and a blog post that we can look up and link to in the show notes, but about how a lazy genius bullet journals, which is pretty much what I need, because I think I was seeing all the nice Pinterest pretty bullet mm-hmm. journals and getting overwhelmed. And I was like, mine doesn't look like that. So if I start a bullet journal in the new year, which is on my radar as something I might do, I would like to start keeping a collection, or I think that's what they call them in bullet journals, collections maybe, or something like that. I would want to keep a couple pages free for tracking the books that I read, and I don't know, maybe even taking notes about them, because sometimes I just end up with notes in my journal about mm-hmm. a book that I've been reading, especially if it was a library book. I don't know. Maybe that's a whole nother conversation. Do you keep track of like your thoughts about a book, or like smart quotations that you want to keep hold of?
Sometimes. I was better about this when I was blogging more regularly, because I blogged about books and book reviews a lot more than I do currently, which is, I'm currently like on a 2 blogs per year schedule mm-hmm. in 2017. no shame. I tend to read these days on Kindle or on the Kindle app, and then all of my highlights show up like on, I'm trying to remember what the website, they changed it. It's no longer like Kindle.amazon. It's something entirely different, and I'll have to look up what the actual website is now. But you can go online and see all of the individual highlights that you've highlighted in a book. And once again, I copy and paste them into Evernote. And you can do this with library books before the library book gets taken back. So as long as the book hasn't been returned yet, you can still copy and paste your highlights, which is helpful. And then obviously if you own the book on Kindle, yeah, you get to keep all your highlights all the time. So I tend to do that. So then that's kind of the easiest way to bulk export highlights for me. If I'm reading a paper book and it's my paper book, I definitely like actually underline in pen or pencil and use the little posty flags to mark things so that I can come back to them later. And sometimes if it's a really good quotation, I'll actually like copy it out in a notebook or type it out or something into Evernote. It all kind of depends on the time and attention span I have when I come across that quote and what I think I'm going to use it for. If it's going to be like someday for a formal review, or if it's something that I maybe want to share as an Instagram caption or something like that, I try to be a bit more intentional about capturing it.
Yeah, that sounds like it's a pretty good system you've got worked out. I know that if I come across a book that I think I'm going to want to take notes on, I will try to buy the paperback version, because I will say mm-hmm. that when I highlight notes and make notes and stuff in my Kindle, they are just lost to the world. Like, I have never once gone back to look at them, even if I thought I was going to, or if I like made a note to, I'm like, I don't want to do that. I don't even really know how to do that. So I will try to buy a paperback book, because I'm a big, margin writer. I'm a big fan mm-hmm. of that. And, sometimes, even if it's not a library book, I will still journal my thoughts about a book, or like how something a book said has like intersected with my life, or, you know, that sort of thing, more like reflections on the book rather mm-hmm. than note taking about the book, if that makes sense.
No, that sounds awesome and really smart. I should probably do that. Like, what impacted you about this book, and why would you recommend it to someone, rather than just like, oh, this is what I liked about the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one thing that I thought about putting it on my Christmas list this year, I should probably add it, or I should just buy it for my own stocking stuffer, because I do all the stocking stuffers for everybody. I've been hearing a lot about book darts, which are part bookmark. Like, I think they show on the edge of the page, so you can like quickly flip through and see like, oh, here's all the pages that I marked something. And then they point to a specific spot on the page, so you can like, mm-hmm. oh, that's right, I was struck by this passage or this sentence, but you don't have to actually write on your book. And they look really pretty, and all the book bloggers are using them, and I'm a little bit envious. So that might have to be something new that I try.
Yes, I put those on my stocking list this year, so we'll see.
Good choice.
Yeah, good choice. So do you have reading goals set for this next year?
I have not chosen my reading goal yet. So typically for the past, let's see, I have to go over to Goodreads now and see, but I think for the last like 4 or 5 years, I have always exceeded my Goodreads goal, like whatever challenge goal I set for myself. Mm-hmm. This year I said that I wanted to read 45 books and I'm one book ahead of schedule, which is probably the closest I've cut it at all in recent years. But I said 45 books this year, and in the last 3 years, the most I've ever done is, for my goal, is 32. The last 2 years I did 25, which I think was just because of having kids. I wanted to not like overextend myself. And then I realized mm-hmm. that I wasn't pushing myself hard enough. So I was like, no, I need to do more and try harder. And now I feel like 45 books is not a bad number, but I think I maybe was like, oh, I have to keep on track, because Goodreads like reminds you if you're not on track when you log in. Yes. And I hate seeing that I'm not on track or ahead. So then I go and read more, and maybe it's taking my time away from more creating, and then I get into too much reading and it takes away from my writing, or I finish a book that I don't really feel like finishing because I just want to get mm-hmm. it on my Goodreads. And so I think I need to back off a little bit for next year. I want it to feel like a good number, but not like such a challenge that I have to actually work at it, because that's not why I read.
That's smart. Yeah. I know, like, if I'm reading for the most part fiction, I can pretty consistently tackle about a book a week without a lot of struggle. I'm a fairly quick reader. So even setting like a goal of 50 books a year isn't like outlandish by any means. Like, I've never mm-hmm. been like, oh, I'm never going to read 50 books this year. But I like what you have to say about, if I set that number lower next year, maybe it will encourage me to spend more time on other creative goals that maybe I don't track as consistently as Goodreads tracks what I read and makes me feel guilty for not reading more.
Yes, this is fair. So I'm trying to remember, because Goodreads tells you when your people, like the people that you're friends with, have surpassed their reading goals. I'm trying to remember, but I think I saw a while back that you've already gone past your goal for this year. Is that right?
Probably. I set the bar really low this year because I knew I would be having a baby and had no idea what life was going to look like. And so I don't even remember what my mm-hmm. goal was this year. But once I discovered I could read on ebook much, much easier, I was able to surpass it.
Yes, that makes a big difference.
Which kind of leads me. Yeah, I'm looking. I never remember where I can find that ad. Is it like on your profile?
Oh, I just found you. Okay, so you said that you were going to read 40 books and you have read 53.
Ooh, well, there you go. So yeah, about a book a week is what I said. That I average. Yes, 53. So that kind of leads me into my goal, I think, for 2018 that I should probably make. I'm not committed yet. That I should probably stop reading just kind of whatever is available, which is kind of what I've been doing. Whatever's available via the library or whatever is available, you know, Amazon Prime these days. Because I've not necessarily read a lot of good books this year. I've read a lot of books, but they haven't all been keepers. So mm-hmm. I think in 2018, I'd like to be a little bit more discerning, I guess, and read more good stuff and not just kind of anything. What about you? Any kinds of goals as opposed to just numerical goals?
Not really. I think just making sure that I keep up a pretty good variety in my reading between fiction and mm-hmm. nonfiction and different types of nonfiction. And I have, in recent years, probably just in the last 2 years, I've become somebody who is willing to give up on a book if I don't think it's good enough or if it's not what I need it to be. So I think that's different than just setting aside a book that's like, it's not the right season for you right now mm-hmm. that I fully intend to come back to. Those in my mind are in a different category than the books that I don't finish. Books that I don't finish are like, no, you're not worth my time and I'm really not going to come back to this. And I had a couple of those this year, I think. And what I do is I move them to a shelf on my Goodreads called Did Not Finish, but I still marked them as read. So they still count because I usually read at least half of a book before I give up on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I only had one book in that category this year, and it was a surprise to me because a lot of people talked highly of it, but I didn't care for it. And then there was another book that I almost gave up on, but it was such a quick read that I was like, whatever, I'll just finish it. Yeah. Do you give up on books?
Like you, I've just started giving up on books in the past couple of years. And I think partly because of a blog post Austin Kleon wrote, and maybe it's even just like a piece of art that he made that's like, I will not finish bad books, or I will not finish bad books. And he just writes that over and over again, like Harry Potter, I will not tell lies. I will not finish bad books.
Yes.
I will not finish bad books. And I was like, you know, that's really smart. Like, why am I wasting my time reading this when I really just don't want to at this point? Like you said, reading is supposed to be enjoyable. So if I'm forcing myself to do this, this is dumb and I should stop. So I've just in the last couple of years started not finishing everything. And like you, I add it to a did not finish shelf on Goodreads. And some of them are things that I want to come back to sometime. They just weren't the right season at that moment. And some of them are just like, no, I'm never going to pick that up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think maybe for me for 2018, I want to be even more ruthless about what I don't finish, because when I look back on my list from this year, which I'm scrolling through right now, I'm like, well, I didn't finish that one. But looking back on it, I think I could have also not finished these three also. So maybe I need to be less willing to keep giving a book a chance or like see if the ending redeems itself. I mostly only tend to do this with fiction, I've noticed. Like nonfiction, I tend to see through till the end. So maybe I'm just better at picking nonfiction that I'm interested in, and fiction is harder to judge. I don't know.
Maybe. And I also think sometimes fiction, there's never really a surprise twist in a nonfiction book. Like when you pick it up, you know what you're asking for. And I think a lot of times with fiction, like we want to stick it out to the end because what happens if, you know, X happens and character Y does this? And I don't know. I think there's much more entertainment value to be found in fiction, and entertainment value of like the shock variety. Like I have to keep reading just in case.
Yes. Yeah, you're more willing to give fiction that like chance just because you don't want to accidentally miss out on the really good thing that would have made this book worth it. It's like if you have not proven yourself to me within 30 to 50% of the way through the book, I'm just not going to do it.
But at the same time, if you only read the first third of Gone Girl and were like, meh, not for me, you missed the whole point of the book. So I don't know.
That's true, but the writing was good enough that you got pulled in. Mm-hmm. Like, and so you didn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even if you didn't care for the plot at that point, the writing was so good that like there has to be something redeemable about a book, basically. If it's not the plot, it has to be the writing or the characters, or there's got to be something going for it
in order to keep you moving forward. So yeah, in 2018, we will not read bad books.
We will not. And speaking of wasting our time on bad books, sometimes we can, unfortunately, be wasting our time on good books too, as much as it pains me to say that. So do you think there's ever a point where you read too much?
Yes, sadly. When you added this to our show outline, I was like, you know, that's kind of a convicting line there. I've not had the chance the last couple of years to read too much. We've just been so busy with getting settled into the house and then having a baby that I just haven't, there hasn't been a chance for me to overextend my ability to read. But I have in the past. And it's normally when like life isn't going the way I want it to, and I need to escape from it. And then I tend to read much, much more than I would ordinarily. And I do it in order to avoid dealing with hard things in life. Like, I really, really should clean the house, but I don't feel like it, so I'm going to read a book instead and say that I was busy. Or if it's like Scott and I need to have a hard conversation about something and I don't want to have that conversation, like if I'm reading when he comes home from work, then I don't have to have that conversation. So when I find that those things are happening more than usual, I find that I need to maybe take a step back and set the book down and kind of re-enter real life for a while.
I agree with that, but also I think that if it comes down to cleaning versus reading, I know which side I'm going to be on almost every time. And yeah. For me, a lot of it comes down to, like, I can, for the most part, I can do most of the household chores with the kids around. But if the kids are not there and I have a chance to read, it's really, really going to be hard for me to vacuum the floors because the house is quiet and I could be reading and actually enjoying a book rather than getting pulled out of it every 30 seconds by somebody who needs something. So I do agree, though, that there's a point where we can, like, one of the appealing things about reading is to escape a little bit, depending on what you're reading. It's to, like, see a new point of view or to escape to a life that's possibly more exciting than your own. And sometimes I think we can take that escapism too far and use it to avoid things in our real life that need addressing, unfortunately. So agree with that. I also think that for me personally, because my time is so limited with the kids, I often choose to read and get sucked into somebody else's story rather than choosing to write and create my own. And when it comes down to a choice like that, like, it's, I can do one or the other, but I cannot do both. I really need to start thinking about what's more important to me right now. Like, if I always choose reading because it's easier than working on a novel or another type of creative writing, then that type of creative writing will never get done if I'm always prioritizing reading. And kind of along the same lines, depending on what I'm reading, that can change my writing voice, for better or for worse. It's not necessarily always a bad thing, but sometimes you really might just need to set aside a certain genre or a certain author with a very unique voice and just spend some time with yourself and with your own writing to focus on your voice and what you need to get done. So there can be too much of a good thing, which is sad.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, just when you find yourself consuming more than you're creating on a regular basis and it's becoming a habit, it's time to just take a look and see if that's something that you need to rebalance. And if it's something that you're prioritizing, if you're always prioritizing reading and never ever writing, then do you actually really want to be writing, or do you really just want to read and not be a writer anymore? And I think most of us would say, like, oh no, of course we want to write. But then we just kind of need to start making that decision with our daily habits and our daily actions.
Yeah, this is true. And sometimes I think that I'm not necessarily reading too much, but I'll read too much of a single genre in one span of time. So either too much nonfiction in one shot or too much, like on the fiction spectrum, young adult fiction is kind of my guilty pleasure. Like, I don't feel guilty about it, but it's like, it's such a specific genre, and I feel like I know that I can't live there all the time, but it's tempting to. And because they're just so often fluffy.
And there's so much good stuff.
There's, like, usually a good love story. They usually have very compelling plot lines. And then they've got a lot of them, fantasy elements or sci-fi elements and all that other stuff that you find in good fiction. And that's one genre in particular that I find I have to be careful with because it's easy for me to consume too much.
I have some reading friends who call books like that brain candy, and it's very true. Like, I'll only have one M&M. You can't do
Nobody
that.
Has just one M&M.
No. So now that we've both kind of admitted that we do need to maybe create a little more than we consume some days, when we do read, we really want it to count. So what resources do you have that you can go to for kind of tried and true book recommendations that don't tend to steer you wrong?
So one of my favorites, and one that I think you like as well, is Modern Mrs. Darcy, which is both a book blog and now she has a podcast called Appropriately, What Should I Read Next?, which often comes with some really great book recommendations. And I found over the years of reading her that we overlap in our tastes in certain areas, and then in other areas we don't so much. So I've, I think she has very good recommendations in general, but in particular for me, like, I know now, because I've been following her for so long, like, that book I probably won't care for, this book I probably will. So it's kind of nice to be able to discern for yourself based on what you look for in a book, to kind of be able to take a recommendation with a grain of salt from someone trusted, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that is really important, kind of knowing what those books are going to translate into for you and not just for her or her, the majority of her readers. That's pretty impressive that you've nailed down that algorithm for yourself.
Yeah, I've actually taken a couple of, because I'm a nerd, I've taken two quizzes about that kind of help you hone in on what's, like what you enjoy when you're reading or your why behind your reading. One of them is a quiz from Anne Bogle, Modern Mrs. Darcy herself, which says that I'm an explorer and I read to experience different things and different perspectives outside my everyday life. And then another quiz is, I think it was from Oprah, actually, from like Oprah's book club or something. And that one is really interesting, like super interesting to read the descriptions on those. But that one, I come out as, I forget what exactly they call it, but somebody who really values good writing. So like I said earlier, I will forgive a bad plot and even bad characters if the writing is amazing. Just knowing those things about myself really helped me be discerning when I'm reading book recommendations.
That's smart. Do you think we could find those quizzes and link to them in the show notes?
Oh, yes. I'm sure I have them bookmarked somewhere. I will sure add them.
Excellent, because I might need to take one or two of those.
Yeah. So how about you? Where do you find your books?
Yeah. The What Should I Read Next podcast, I binged on that for a while and added tons of books to my list. And now I've kind of banned myself from listening to that podcast until I have less books on my list, which is never going to happen. So I may never listen to that podcast again, or I should listen to the podcast and just not add every single book she talks about to my to be read list. We'll see if that can happen.
True.
Otherwise, other podcasts that I've listened to in the past that I got really good recommendations from, the New York Times Book Review. Sometimes it's a little highbrow for me, but I think it's important to kind of broaden my horizons through what I read. So I've been introduced to some books that I wouldn't otherwise have picked up through that book review podcast. And that's interesting. There's usually several segments on it where they talk about new books or have interviews with authors, or a few people from the book review just talk about what they happen to be reading, whether it's highbrow or lowbrow or something in between. And that's always interesting too, to hear what other people think about what is popular in the time being. Mm-hmm. Another podcast I really like, it doesn't have episodes releasing all the time, but it's worth going back through the archives. The Greenlight Bookstore Radio Hour is a bookstore in Brooklyn, New York, and they do really in-depth interviews with authors about things. And that is how I found out about The Magician's Trilogy. Have you read that by Lev Grossman?
I have not even heard of it, I don't think. So do enlighten me.
Well, I had never heard of it either, but it's described as a Harry Potter for adults. And I would agree with that. It's not like as endearing as Harry Potter, but it's about magic. It's kind of a cross between Harry Potter and Narnia and YA literature. It's interesting, and it's about a, you know, kind of a spoof a little bit. It's about kids who attend a magic school and go on adventures and things like that. So it's well worth a read if you like fantasy and magic and that genre in general.
Ooh, that sounds wonderful. And I love the idea of a podcast that does author interviews that are maybe beyond what you are just going to catch as like a snippet on Good Morning America or something, where they ask like three questions and then you're like, I still know nothing about you. Okay, cool.
And a lot of the episodes are actually just like hour-long festival performances that have been recorded and then turned into podcast form. So it's actually like an interview with an author in front of a live audience, like it would be if you went to a book festival.
Cool. That sounds really interesting. I'll have to look that one up. And then another podcast that we both like is The Simple Show. And their podcast format changes every now and then. They used to do episodes specifically about books. And I'm not sure if they still do those anymore, but books still come up pretty often. Like, I don't know that they do their book club book shows anymore, but they do still have, like they had an episode about reading for fun back in October, which is just a couple months ago. So I think books are still going to be fairly common there. And Tish Oxenrider, who's the host of the show, and her guests always have very good, smart recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I second The Simple Show. And otherwise, I think a fun way to find books is through Instagram. You can follow kind of Instagram accounts, like there's one that I follow called Booked and Ready, and that's B-O-O-K-E-D and Ready. And she posts really beautiful photos of books like all over in her travels and things. And then also following the hashtag Bookstagram, so like Instagram, but with book instead of in at the front, you can usually find some good recommendations. And a lot of them are kind of whatever's popular and whatever's being promoted by the big five publishers at the time. But then you can every now and again find some good old stuff that hasn't gotten some love in a while. So I really like the Bookstagram hashtag.
Yeah, I think Instagram is also a fun way to connect with people in the bookish community too. You know, you see somebody that you follow is reading such and such a book or is looking for book recommendations or just finished a book that you loved and want someone to talk about it with. That's a really great place to foster that bookish community if you are not part of a real life book club and you maybe need somebody to share your thoughts with. Instagram's a good place for that.
It is. So are you part of a book club or have you ever been part of a book club?
I was. After college, there was a group of us that would get together still from the English department. And over the years, I think it only lasted a year, maybe two, or maybe by the second year, it was very small and it was more wine club than book club. Mm-hmm. But the first year it went pretty strong. And then what happened was, you know, we were all kind of in the same area for college. And as the time went on, you know, people got married, people moved away, people had babies. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of like the thing that we had in common was no longer our thing in common. So I think if I were to be part of a new book club, which would be fun, it would need to be based a little bit more around location and people in the same season of life as me and that sort of thing.
People who have a little more grace when you show up and you're like, I didn't get past chapter two because it was one of those weeks.
Yes, yes, exactly.
I've been in a couple different book clubs, and the one that I've stuck with kind of the longest is location-based. I got invited into the book club for the neighborhood, the ladies in our neighborhood. And so we live in the absolute middle of nowhere. So like my nearest neighbor is, I don't know, like half a mile down the road. And nobody actually lives like close to each other when you're out here in the middle of nowhere. But even someone who lives only 2 miles away from you is considered close. So it's a group of about 8 ladies in kind of a 5-mile radius. And it's kind of neat because everyone has been in this neighborhood a lot longer than I have. So I've kind of been, I don't know, invited into the neighborhood and this book club kind of at the same time, which is really cool. But I am also the youngest member of this book club by at least 30 years.
So. I was wondering that because you kept saying ladies, which usually has like a, you know, a little bit of a connotation about age sometimes.
It does. So my good friend Sue is kind of like the bridge between me and book club, and that's how I got invited. But everyone is several decades older than I am, and it's just really cool. Everyone has a really different background, and like nobody is the same religion or the same political party, and nope, some people do have kids, some people never had kids. And so lots of different perspectives, which is kind of cool. And we approach it like every other month is book club, and whoever hosts picks the book. And then we do dinner, kind of a potluck style. And you have to bring something that's somewhat themed around the book. So the host picks like the main dish And then everyone kind of rallies around that. And that's really fun. So I've read some books that I would not ordinarily have read because other people have picked them.
Yeah, that sounds like a really great way to gain different perspectives on books and to broaden your horizons. And then also, it's almost like a cooking club, too. I love that.
It really is.
That is fantastic, because that was part of the problem with the book club I was in, was we were all in the same stage of life. We were all the same age, and we had all just gotten out of the same writing program with the same mm-hmm. teachers, and we'd all been reading the same authors for 4 years, and it was probably a little bit too homogenous, I guess. Is that a word that you can apply to that situation? We probably could have used a little bit of an outsider's perspective or a different perspective. So yeah, that's something to definitely consider if I ever get into a book club again. That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, it is fun. And it's only every other month, so it doesn't feel overwhelming or anything like that. So that's mm-hmm. kind of nice.
Yeah, it's much more doable.
Yeah. So all things considered, do you have a best book that you've read this year? If you could only recommend like one or two books, what would you recommend?
Yes. So this question is horrible, because even only reading 45 books in a year, I'm like, how do I pick just one? So I cheated. I picked one fiction and one nonfiction. My fiction pick is Beartown by Frederick Bachman or Backman. Mm-hmm. We never did figure out how to pronounce this author's name, but really, really fantastic novel. Like, I don't need to go back into it again, because we've talked about it already at length, but Beartown was an amazing book. It's going to be a trilogy. I can't wait for the sequel translation to come out in English, because it's a book in translation, if that's something you've been wanting to add to your list. Mm-hmm. Really fantastic. Highly recommended.
Excellent. Well, I'm keeping that one at the top of my list. I can't wait to dive into more Bachman. My favorite fiction book is a tie. So you cheated and said you're going to talk about two books. I'm going to talk about three, because I cannot choose between these two fiction books. Frederick Bachman's A Man Called Ove was fabulous. I described it as the perfect novel, and I'm not backing down from that recommendation. And my other favorite book that I read, and I've already recommended on the podcast, so I won't go into too much detail, is A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles, which is also a book in translation, I believe. Maybe not. No,
I don't know.
It's set in Russia, so I'm thinking it should be written in Russian, but I don't think it is, now that I say that. Anyway, excellent book. Almost the entire thing takes place in a single hotel, and it spans like 60 years. So I highly recommend that one as well, both for plot device, but the writing is exquisite. So those are my two fiction picks.
Fantastic. Such glowing recommendations. And I think that what people can take away from this, no matter what, is that you guys need to read Frederick Bachman.
Like, yes, clearly.
Two of his books, two different books, showed up for each of us on our like top picks of the list for 2017. So that is definitely an author to follow. Mm-hmm. And my nonfiction pick was probably a little bit different. I don't know how talked about or how popular this book was, but it's called Liturgy of the Ordinary, Sacred Practices in Everyday Life by Tish Harrison Warren. And this book I have underlined and written all over and will probably be going back to reread again and again. It's a little bit similar to Emily P. Freeman's work, in that it's about finding the sacredness in your everyday life, no matter where it happens to be. But she takes from actual liturgical elements of the church. I can't remember which denomination she is. I'm Catholic, which is a liturgical faith. And it just really connected with me that you can bring those aspects of your faith. Mm-hmm. And she talks a bit about creativity as well into your everyday life. Like, she has a section on like having tea and reading a book can be like this spiritual practice. And I can't remember what all they connected to, but it was a really lovely book, and I wanted to give it some love because I adored it, and I have not heard very many people talking about it.
Oh, that sounds lovely. I cannot wait to pick that one up. I was raised non-denominational / pretty much Baptist, and I think we're like the least liturgical group of Christians in the world. Like, we have no traditions. We don't do anything the same as any other church ever. And it kind of irritates me. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that about my church, but we just, there's just nothing to look forward to in that kind of aspect mm-hmm. of tradition. So I like the idea of having a cup of tea and reading a book as a spiritual practice. And I need to read this book.
Yes. So I think you would like it.
Yeah, I will look that one up. My best nonfiction this year was a book that you and Callie Fian had talked about way back in season one, about a book that you guys loved, and it's Great with Child, Letters to a Young Mother, and it's by Beth Ann Fennelly. And when you guys were describing it, I was like, oh, that sounds lovely. But at the time, I had no intention of having a baby anytime soon. And so I didn't even put it on my list. But then, surprise, I wound up pregnant last year and read this book this spring. And it was really, really good. I started it before Arthur was born and kind of finished it up shortly after he was born. And it was a really perfect time to read that book. He did not come into the world the way we were all expecting. And that's actually my baby monitor beeping at me. So it's running low on batteries. Perfect timing. You can turn that off. Solo parenting for the win.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was really good. Arthur did not come into the world at all how we were expecting. He was extremely overdue and had a horrible labor and delivery and had a lot of issues nursing. It just was not a great month or two of life. And I found that Great with Child was almost kind of healing in a way, being able to read through that and kind of connect with some of the things she says about motherhood and having children and raising children just really, I don't know, kind of cleaned the slate for me and allowed me to look at things with a bit better perspective than what I had been looking at them.
Yes, I think this book should be like if you know somebody who's pregnant, especially if they're a first time mom, you should just go buy them this book because it's healing is exactly the right word for it. I read that book at kind of the same time frame with Hadley. So I started it right before she was born and I finished it right after she was born. And I remember sitting in the bathtub after she was born sobbing while reading this book because I was just like, I had a really tough time emotionally for a while after Hadley was born, and that book helped immensely with just sort of bringing your life back together and like, it's mm-hmm. okay, you are a mother, but you are still a person. And yeah. I think it really helps that the author was writing letters to a specific woman when she wrote this book. It's a compilation of actual letters. Mm-hmm. And you can just really feel like the love and the comfort yeah. coming through in her words. So highly recommend that one as well. That was a good pick.
And oh my goodness, if I could ever write actual letters to a person that are that beautiful, I would just die.
Oh my gosh, I know. It's like poetry. And then you sit there and you're like, she mailed these. This could have gotten lost in the mail.
I hadn't even thought about that aspect. I was thinking more of the fact that they're just like, oh, and I just dashed this off in an afternoon while I was, you know, waiting in the carpool lane. I can't write that beautifully unintentionally.
I know. I don't think I could write that beautifully on purpose.
Also true. Also true. So I'm so glad that you and Callie recommended that one a couple of years ago and very, very glad that I picked it up. And I would recommend that one, like you said, to any first time mom, especially, but even any other mom who's having a bit of a difficult transition into, you know, kid number two or kid number three, or really just needs to kind of, you know, slow down a little bit after welcoming a baby into this world.
Yes. Wholeheartedly agree. So on that encouraging note, this is our last episode of 2017. We're taking a break for Christmas and New Year's, and we will be back in January to talk some more about creative goals. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If you'd like to help us bring this podcast to life each week, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/chasingcreative.
And if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.